You're listening to the Broadway Podcast Network.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Well, hello everybody. Surprise! Gotcha. Bitch, shit. Okay. Well, welcome to a brand new episode of Off Book. This is, listen, I'm not ready.
You're already snorting. What did you do to him? Because he know
I'm not ready.
Yes.
Like, because I'm like, I'm caught off guard. There are no numbers up here.
He's thrown off.
So, y'all, thank y'all for tuning in to a brand new episode of Off Book presented to you by Broadway Black. We're ready to hit our marks. I'm going to hit our marks right now. I'm Drew Shade.
I'm Danye Love.
I'm Crystalline.
Yeah!
What's
y'all,
up?
We got Crystalline.
She
Lord
said, what's up?
What's up?
What's good?
What is up for real,
what's
though, bitch?
Goody?
What's good?
Let's get in.
Y'all don't even know how much I am in love with Crystalline Lloyd. Like, for the longest time, like, I remember, okay, we first met when you were doing Dear Evan Hansen at Second Stage off Broadway.
Come through.
Mm-hmm. Now, when I tell y'all, I did not want to see this show, y'all.
Oh, Lord.
I did not want to see it. I did not want to do anything with it. Mm-mm. Didn't care about it.
She didn't.
Was the only black person in there.
You were like, and who is she?
Yeah. But what? No, I knew you from, you had already done Invisible Thread. Mm-hmm. So I knew you from that, but I didn't really know you like that. But I knew you were very talented. I knew she sang her ass off. She, you know, soprano for days.
Come through.
Like, I knew she had it. I knew she had it. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
And so we had like a real good kiki. And I still have the video. I'd never, like, you know how I'm in particular about my presentation and shit. And so for the longest time, I thought that Kristen was mad at me. That because I didn't release this video. Because, I think people get mad at me because I don't release. If it is not the way that I envision it in my head, if it doesn't come out that way.
Yeah.
Even though we had a great interview, we laughed, we joked, you know, I still have the shit. But if it doesn't come out the way I want, I don't release the shit. And so I'm getting over that now that I'm rebuilding my foundation.
Yeah.
But
did not.
I thought for the longest time she was upset with me or like.
Didn't even know you felt that way.
Oh my gosh, yes. And then,
that's
because
so
then she was the correspondent for us on doing a Meet the Nominees for the Tony Awards.
Which was so fun.
Which was fun. And that never came out or released.
No,
either.
I didn't.
No, because
you were like, what is this nigga
giving? I was like, look. You may not be as good as this stuff as you think you are, Crystalline.
Oh, wow.
No, she was so great.
Wow, I can imagine.
You know what I'm saying? So I was like, you know what? I'm not going to take it personal. It just is what it is. I'll get better, and maybe Drew will let me come along another time, and, you know, we'll reconnect.
What?
I was like, it's all good, though. I had no ill feelings
towards
you whatsoever.
But look at, like, y'all both had these differing thoughts. You thought this
and
one
they were
thing.
Both
you thought this one thing.
Yes.
The most apocalyptic for us.
Well, because I just felt like, you know, people spend their good to earn time and energy.
Mm-hmm.
And she was in the middle of a show. Like, she had shows that day. Like, you know, Meet the Nominees is always doing, like, I think, what, a two-show day or just a crazy day. And I knew that she had a matinee that day, and she came dressed and ready and looking good.
Yeah,
and she did her good interviewing skills, and like, we got some original exclusive content that nobody else really had.
It was such a fun day. I really don't care if anybody ever sees it. It was so fun because we also did it with, what is his name?
Dustin Ross.
Yes.
Yeah, my good friend Dustin, who's on the Friend Zone podcast.
He's
And he said he ran into you on the train one day.
He did. I felt so bad. Okay, oh my God. So my earbud fell out and fell on the train floor, which is nasty.
Right?
And so I went to shake his hand, but then the earbud fell, and I was like, oh, well, I can't just leave the earbud. So I went to grab it, and then I put it in my left hand or something, and I went to shake him with my right hand. I was like, oh, but I already touched the ground. It's gross. I'm shaking his hand with, like, nasty hand. I felt so bad.
Well, no, he called me and said, he ran into you on the train. He told me, and he was like, you know, I'd be in my own world on the train, and this girl came up to me and started talking to me, and, you know, I was looking at her like, I didn't know she was a fan of his, you know, because he has his own show.
No, I was literally just like, we work together.
And so
for
he was being
nice.
He said he was being nice because he didn't know if you were a fan, but then he realized he recognized you from working with me. He was like, oh, so then that's when he loosened up, you know?
Yeah, he was very formal when I first came up to him.
Because you just never know when, you know.
I thought it was because I shook his hand with my subway. I was like, oh, okay. Okay, that was my goodness.
No, but he realized, you know, eventually that you guys worked together.
That was such a fun day. And to be around, like, when the people in my show had been nominated. It was just so fun. Right. It was just fun for me.
So, Krystal Lloyd is the original cast member of Dear Evan Hansen.
I am.
And when I went to go see the show, I did not want to see it.
Yes.
Like, I did not care about these white folks, and Krystal was in the show. I'm like, okay, they got this one token black girl, so that's why they're trying to ask me to come and see the show.
And she do this little dance.
Right.
Like, yeah, what's up?
And but, you know, that literally saved somebody's life, because that same day, it was 2016, that same day I sat in the audience to watch the show, I got a call from the videographer saying that he lost all of our footage from the Meet the Nominees the year before you did it. So it was 2016. He told me he lost all the footage because he had did another shoot and he cleared his memory card and never sent me everything. So, like, all these 2016 nominees, I mean, we interviewed David Diggs, Leslie Odom Jr.
I know you are hot.
Oh, my God.
I already, I know he was hot.
Oh, I had to sit through that show.
Oh.
I had to sit through your show. Literally, as the curtain is about to go up for the show, I'm talking to him on the phone. I said, I have to go. I'm about to sit through the show. And my flames on the side of my head.
That is...
like, burning flames.
I already
heat,
know.
That's stressful, like, as fuck.
Oh my God. But the music healed me.
Ooh.
Oh, okay.
That's the only reason why I'm in love with Dear Evan Hansen now, because the music healed me.
Wow.
That saved his life.
Okay. All right.
Because I was burning up. And also, I had recorded my own audio. So I had the audio. I still have the audio from all of those days. So I have the interviews.
That's so much work.
Wow. Right. And so it was so much work to, like, try to put maybe, I was going to try to put a podcast out or something. I just was tired.
Yeah.
And so when things just don't go the way that I want them to, I just be like, you know what? I'm going to release this. I'm going to move on, because the days keep moving. You know what I'm saying? Like,
With or without you.
Yeah, with or without me. The news keeps coming. So Playbill, Broadway.com, Theater Manager, they have teams of people.
Yeah.
It's just me. You know what I mean? And so when something goes wrong, I don't have the time to sit and let it fester. If it doesn't come out the way I want, I don't have time to like sit with it and make it right, because I have to move on. And so when that happened, this show, like, really got me down in my feelings. You know, even though he's a liar, and even though he's, you know, problematic in a way.
Facts.
It just, something about the music, like, just really touched my soul.
Wow.
And I just thought it was so, and that's why I always said I want to see a black, you know, Evan Hansen, even to have a standby. You know, we talked about that too. You know, we always a standby, never the lead. But Krystal was just so amazing in this show. And I am in awe of your gift and what you bring to the stage, and how you're able to portray characters and also mesh well with white folks. Like,
honey,
I'm in awe of that, because that ain't my ministry, boo.
Honey.
So talk to me. Tell me a little bit about how you got to where you are. Like, what's going on? What's good?
Yeah.
Like, how you got to this place.
To this place.
Yeah.
In this studio
today.
Well, I waited
outside. Walk us down the road.
Right.
I waited outside thinking that all the doors were locked. Meanwhile, there's a security guard sitting across the lobby just looking at me.
Like, are you coming in?
Yeah.
Like, what's
and
up?
I just stood out there. I was like, oh, Drew, I'm out here? Oh, it's cold.
She said, I pressed the button.
You better press the button. You better press the button.
Anyway, well, I've been in New York for like almost 5 years now. So it's been a minute. I lived in LA for 7 years before that. And yeah, I mean, what else do you want to know?
What was the move? What prompted the move from LA to
New York? I always wanted to try New York.
Mm-hmm.
I knew that I wanted to give it a go, and my team was really excited about the idea of me doing New York, but I said I cannot go out there without a job.
That's real.
Because I was just telling, you know, producer earlier, I was just like, you can't be cute and broke in New York. Like,
talk
it's real hard.
It.
It's really hard to be cute and broke. I said, but LA is like cute and like sunny. You got hikes. You got pretty people. You know, like, I was cute even though I didn't have no money. And so I was like, I need a job when I go to New York. And it just worked out nicely. I finished up Witness Uganda at ART. And I got a call from a show. I had done a workshop with them before I had done the at ART, and they were like, hey, the person playing your role right now off Broadway is leaving. Do you want to come play your role that you played in the workshop? And I was like, yeah.
Of course.
That was Heathers.
So
I came into New York in June and found a cute little spot.
You came already booked.
I did.
Come on.
So I made that move, and it was a good thing. I'm glad I did.
That's what's up.
Yeah.
And so how did you get involved with Invisible Thread?
I had known Leslie Odom Jr. And at one point he introduced me to Griffin and Matt. And they called me and they said, you know, we're doing this project, this new musical. It's about aid work in Africa. Mm-hmm. And I had just literally 2 weeks before they called me returned back from being a missionary in Southeast Asia.
Wow.
For most of the year before. And I was like, this is wonderful. This kind of meshes in with my energy and my focus right now as far as my faith and my career goes. So it just worked out nicely. And I started working on it with them. And I was with it for about 4.5, 5 years.
Yeah. Really?
Yeah.
Before it went to
Off-Broadway.
That's amazing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, from the start.
It's a beautiful
That's
musical.
Amazing.
And I see that now that they're holding auditions, they're doing something in L.A.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I really love the piece. It was something I really fell in love with.
Oh, I'm so glad.
You know, just because, just having, I like good music. I like music that touches the soul. Mm-hmm. And that piece really does it. And there were people in that show that showcased what true heart and what love is and what it can be. Mm-hmm. And then also in the face of adversity or in the face of people that just don't understand true love. You know what I mean? And so I knew that all too well. I think it spoke to my soul because I knew that all too well in my own life. So if you don't know Invisible Thread, please go look up the videos. Go look as much as you can. You know, I'm still waiting on.
You can also look up Witness Uganda.
Witness Uganda, yes.
With it, it's going to L.A. now and they changed the name.
I keep calling it.
Oh, right.
It's totally fine. You can call it, you know, whichever you know it by. But
As long as you know it, okay.
As long as you know it.
So wait, it was Witness Uganda, then Invisible
then
Thread, now back to.
Now they're going back to Uganda. I think they're kind of trying to go back to the roots, the foundation that they had built, the skeleton.
Yeah.
So I think it'll be, I think it's more receivable. I think it'll be more receivable that way.
Okay.
Seeing it the way you're going to see it in LA, like that's the way that we had always intended it to be.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
So are you going to be a part of that as well?
No. I'm going to stay here.
Okay. New York.
Okay. Do you have something else like in the works?
I do. Do you want to know?
Well, yeah, we definitely want to know.
Spill tea.
Spill tea.
Your whole body is both.
Yes,
y'all.
We leaned in.
Both of y'all were like straight men, just like, hey, yeah, just all the attention.
Come on, we want to know what's up.
Like, I am fine. Okay.
Come on.
So I'm doing a workshop of a new musical right now called Bliss.
Yes, and we did talk about this.
Yeah, so it's fun. It's really, really fun. I got involved with that about a year and a half ago. Cheryl Callers directing it, and she kind of was like, hey, I have this project I think you'll like.
Who is this white woman?
Cheryl Caller.
Okay.
She would be offended if you said that.
Was she?
She's Jewish.
She's a white woman.
She is.
Okay, Jewish. Girl.
I'm trying.
Yeah, listen, but we gonna call a spade a spade. That's what we do over here.
Here's the thing. She saw me in Invisible Thread with Uganda, and then she saw me in Dear Evan Hansen, and she was like, I need you to stop playing teenagers.
Ooh.
She was like, you have something deeper. And
listen, Paradise Blue, you were a grown woman.
Come on now.
Paradise Blue, you were a grown woman.
Grown ass woman.
Yes. With a broom.
With in a book.
Right, hello?
A broom and a book.
Yes.
So yeah, she brought me in.
What? What is going on, Diane?
Because I can't take a broom and a book, honey.
A broom and a book.
All you need in life.
Okay.
A broom and a book.
Hey.
Yes.
I felt a beat coming. But yeah, so I'm doing that right now. That's for the month of October. I'll be doing that as a workshop, which is great. They offered a workshop contract.
That's awesome.
Which, you know,
doesn't happen.
Honey. Yeah. So, yeah, I'm doing that. And then I'm going to start rehearsals in November for a play at the Atlantic Theater Company.
Come through.
Yes.
Yes, yes, yes.
Can you say the name of that?
I think so. I think I'm allowed to say something.
Have they not told you can say something? Or?
Well, they haven't announced it.
Well, we can got the tea right here. Just go ahead and spill it.
Okay. It's called Blue Ridge.
Okay.
Yes.
Oh, by Abby?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, Abby.
Yes.
Y'all better get it.
Now, who is this white woman?
just that, a white woman.
Okay.
Abby and I were in a writer's retreat 2 summers ago with The Lark.
Okay.
When I was working on my play in the middle, she was working on another play there.
See, so, I like to know how things intersect, how we all know each other.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that's really great. So tell us how you got involved with Dear Evan Hansen, though.
Oh, right. Well, I just finished. We just opened Invisible Thread, and I was heartbroken because that was 4.5, 5 years of my life, and we weren't going to Broadway.
And I still don't understand that because the reviews came out in New York Times and were not good. because they didn't understand.
Oh, the reviewer that got fired?
Yeah, right, right. Mm-hmm. Right. Yes, you better
throw
speak
it
on
out
it.
There. Throw it out there.
You better speak on it. Yes.
I wish y'all could have saw the little head action that she gave.
And people have been asking us to video the podcast, but I just don't, my face, I can't.
True.
I say some things and we bleep, and so we bleep, then they be reading mouths and all sorts of stuff.
I'm sure it can be a little bar that goes over your mouth.
Listen, we ain't got time for all that. The reviews didn't come out. The reviews came out, they weren't that great. But you were finished with that, so you were heartbroken because it wasn't going to Broadway.
Yeah,
I think we were all heartbroken with that.
That was a heartbreak for me.
Yeah.
You know, and this industry will give you some, so.
Mm-hmm.
And then I got a call for this musical I had never heard of. I didn't know anything about it. And I saw it was a teenager, and I was like, no, I'm not doing any more teenagers. And my reps were like, you should really consider it. And I think it was like 2 days later, I still hadn't said yes to mm-hmm. the audition, but I was looking at the material at my friend's house, and in walks Ben Platt and Laura Dreyfus. Like, I didn't even know them.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, hey, nice to meet you. And then someone mentioned that I was going in for it, or that I was thinking about going in for it. And they were like, they just looked at me, and she goes, Laura goes, oh, you're going to book it. And I was like, oh, cool. Because I didn't know what it was.
Wow.
I hadn't like really read it. I hadn't gotten into it, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So I was just like, cool, thanks. And I'm thinking like, don't prophesy something over me that I don't even know.
don't try it.
Don't do witchcraft on me. But I eventually auditioned for it and, you know, had a good conversation with Michael Greif going into it because I was still a little nervous to say yes. And
Michael Greif is the director.
Michael Greif is the director. Mm-hmm. And I had always really wanted to work with him.
Yeah.
So.
I mean, Rent.
I know.
Like,
I know.
You know, when you do something life-changing like Rent,
mm-hmm, mm-hmm,
especially in musical theater,
yeah,
you want that sort of direction.
I love a director who wants to do pieces like that.
Yeah.
That's what I love.
Right.
And I'm like, there's something about that person that I'm going to have really great conversation
mm-hmm
with. I'm going to have good collaboration mm-hmm with. And we did. You know, he would ask me to go out to dinner, you know, took me mm-hmm out before my last show, you know, every now and then I get a text from him checking in on me. He's
good,
you know,
people. Awesome.
So
yeah,
it was just really lovely to meet someone who was so like, I'm great to like build a community,
mm-hmm,
who, actors, producers, whatever. Like, so
yeah, I love that.
So after talking to him and kind of just thinking about it, I was like, you know what, let me just do it. I don't have anything else. This will be a good healing from, you know, my other show not going. So
right,
that's how I got involved.
Did you know it was going to Broadway?
Like, everyone talked about it going to Broadway, but I had just finished doing a show that everyone
was talking about.
Uh-huh.
So you wasn't even like getting yourself.
Wasn't in that headspace.
Yeah. Until they announced they were going to
right
Broadway.
Wow.
And I was still off
attached
Broadway. I was still off Broadway, uh-huh, and hadn't yet been told I was going with them.
Ooh.
So it was like kind of like announced, and then it was like,
well, what's
it? Is it they have?
What's it going to get?
That silence. I think it was like my last, maybe second to last show. My agents called me that morning and told me that they were like, they're going to offer you, you know, the role of Alana, and then Michael Greif came and talked to me, you know, before.
Were they
hour
hesitant or something?
I'm sure. I actually have no idea, and I don't care.
Yeah, because
here we are right now.
Exactly.
And, do you see what I mean?
Right, and a Grammy.
I could dwell on whether or not.
Hey, glory!
Hey.
But the truth is uh-huh, when I wake up and roll over,
that Grammy is sitting right there.
And so is that Emmy.
Okay.
Hey.
Yes.
And however, you know, you want to see it. It's just like, I have to keep moving forward.
And that cast mm-hmm album is amazing, and you sound great on it.
Wow.
Songs are, you know, the songs were a bop. And
The songs were a bop. Do you hear me? Like, I was running around my house almost waving through a window. Oh, like,
it was a bop.
And we were Jerrica.
Yeah.
So Jerrica's a producer on the show. You can't hear her. But me and her were like, when this song came out,
getting entire life. Entire life.
We were in it.
Yes, now.
Going off. Dear Evan Hansen, like, I need to hear a black family sing this music. Like,
yes.
You know who I want to hear? The Jackson family. Aisha
Listen
Jackson and her family.
Ooh,
oh, wow.
They need to do their own rendition of You Will Be
You
Her
Know
Own.
What?
That wow
family, that family,
family sings.
Is sick.
Wow.
Sings.
I can't tell you how many times I've gone to her Instagram page just in my feelings, needing to hear something from the Lord. And listen, I said, you know what? Aisha's family is always singing something about that. And I will go to her Instagram page and get fed.
I'm going on a YouTube binge for her family. Her family has like old Christmas videos.
Yeah.
Like, I'll go on a YouTube video and watch, you know, Victor and her sister and her sing and her mom and her dad. Like, oh, it's so good. I
so
love
to be healed. Those it songs is a vibe.
And Michael Kilgore just did a, like, he sang one of the You Will Be Found.
Yeah.
And he's talking about he would love to be a black. Now, I think, Michael, you're a little too old to be trying to play Evan Hansen. But, child, you can so enough sing that music all day. Do a concert version,
a
Michael.
A concert version.
Yes.
I'm sure Justin and Benj would call him back for a concert version.
Yes, come on and do a concert version. We would love that.
He's so good.
Because he was singing that, You Will Be Found.
Everybody was singing it. My family would send me videos.
I know that's right.
Of my sister-in-law sent me one video of my brother in the shower. Women. Just women. And then he would like stop and go, and go, women. And I was like, oh.
You better vocalize.
My brother is a great singer. So she sends me videos of my nephews who are 10 and 8, and one of them plays guitar,
uh-huh.
and the other plays piano. And they're singing, you know, You Will Be Found, or
I'm telling
you're not
you, it
alone.
Is a it is a Christian rock musical. It is a Hillsong.
Come on,
spirit lifting.
It's a bop.
It's them chords. I don't know what it's about. It's them contemporary Christian chords that just get you
all
the way in.
Justin Paul comes from a Christian background.
It's so prevalent.
We actually, I found out that he went to this sports camp growing up.
Mm-hmm.
I was a counselor at that sports camp.
Wow.
And at the same time, I was a counselor. His wife was a counselor.
Wow.
Like down the street. From me at different campuses of this camp.
Yeah.
It was a big camp called Kanakuk, and
yes,
it was
Kanakuk.
A Christian sports camp, and he worked there, and I was like, oh, and his dad is a pastor. So Justin grew up like writing music for church and playing for the church,
and that makes so much sense. And if you guys don't know who that is, you know, he wrote the what other musicals? I can't even think of them off the top of my head. But
A Dog Fight and Christmas Story.
Christmas Story is a good one.
The Peach, James and the Giant Peach.
James and the Giant Peach is another good one.
Yeah.
Also, La La Land.
La La Land and the
movie.
What's that one with the circus tent?
Oh,
The Greatest Showman.
Greatest Showman. Oh,
wow.
Now, we love The Greatest Showman.
Okay, I wasn't throwing shade. I just honestly couldn't remember.
Yeah. No, we love The Greatest Showman, too. Like, you know, the music in that is is the business. Danye's looking at me like, oh, okay.
No, I'm listening. I'm taking it all in.
But do you like The Greatest Showman?
I've never saw The Greatest Showman.
You know what?
So that's why I'm saying, I'm taking it all in, nigga.
So you ain't never seen Dear Evan Hansen either, have you?
I haven't seen
Dear. You ain't heard the music either.
Mm-mm.
See, Danye don't be in the musicals.
That's okay.
Danye, I need you to get into the musicals.
No, I love it.
I am. I'm getting in more and more. Okay? You see me leaning
more
in.
And more.
I'm getting in more and more.
More and more.
See?
Thank you. Come on.
Thank you.
No, you can't just do that and just like not. Come on. You got
my spirit.
I can't
even remember the rest of it. What's the rest of it?
Oh, my God. Listen, I can't even look because I'm starting to get hot.
I need you.
Yes.
I love you more and more.
Yes. Yes, God. Hallelujah.
What song is that?
Y'all gonna make me shout. I think that's Lawrence Flowers.
Maybe.
Lawrence Flowers and Intercession.
Okay.
You not know my gospel.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, but that's, that just does my heart so well. Now I can't even think. Like,
that's okay. We were talking about just the music and why I took the job.
Yeah. Okay. So from Dear Evan Hansen, you went on to do
Paradise Blue.
Mm-hmm. So that's black. That's
honey,
Ruben Santiago.
That's black.
Black.
Let's talk. Let's talk.
Good
about,
and black.
That's Dominique Mariso.
It is black.
Ruben Santiago Hudson directed.
Yes.
So what was the difference in the dynamic of going from Dear Evan Hansen to Paradise Blue?
It was the most. It was therapy for me.
Ooh, yeah.
Because look, you can look at the whatever from the positives of Dear Evan Hansen, but it was a lot.
Mm-hmm.
I felt overwhelmed at times.
Just in terms of the process?
Yes, and I lose my anonymity in
because
ways
you were the only black person.
And there's not only just like, you know, I can't walk down for it. I can walk down, you know, between those blocks, but it can be annoying if it's on a certain, and I don't like anybody.
Yeah.
Well, say that.
Well, because the show outside, like, the fans were really crazy.
Yeah.
They were like, you know, at the stage door, they were like really into it.
It got to a point where
doing the most.
They had to beef up security. We had people prank call us and send us like weird messages about death and if we die, and it was very unsettling.
Well, because these theater fans be weird.
That's like ridiculous.
Theater fans are very unique. They're very sensitive, empathetic people.
Yes.
And they are.
That's a good way to explain it, because I'm saying weird. That's a good way. You got the words. Because...
So as much as we love like having people love our work, it's still, I don't know how the other cast members were. I can speak for myself. I look at like Anna Deavere Smith.
Right.
I want her anonymity and her success.
Yes.
Does that make sense?
Yes.
That's actually a great example. Because
she can walk down the street
any day.
Yeah. That's a great
example.
And
then you turn on HBO and she snatches your wig.
Yes.
Yeah.
With her talent.
I feel that.
So
and she got a check, a coin.
A coin. Mm-hmm. So it can be overwhelming. So going from that to this intimate off-Broadway show that was about blackness was so healing.
That's
wonderful. In the process. And Dominique is such a, she loves like women and community and like girlfriends and sisterhood.
Yeah.
So getting to work with her a second time, you know, being a little more comfortable in the piece, we got to kiki and we got to work together on stage one night because, you know, Simone couldn't make it because she was shooting.
Right.
And
Simone was in Luke Cage at the time.
She was shooting
season two, I believe.
That's my girl.
Yeah.
You know, we went to Greece together and France.
I did.
Oh, wow.
Yes.
That was just recently, though, wasn't it?
I took my mom to Greece and France because Simone had told me like a while. She told me like a couple weeks before that her and her mom were going. She was like, "Do you want to come?" Da 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 da. And I was like,
"Yeah,
I do." So I got my stuff together, and then I called my dad and got my mom's schedule, and then I surprised her.
Oh.
And I was like, "You're coming to Greece and France," and so we did like
a
mom-daughter trip with Simone and her mom.
That is so beautiful.
It was so fun. It was like, I was like, we could make a movie about this, like this, and nothing like extra happened. There was nothing dramatic, but it was just so fun to see four women kind of like
four black women.
And then it was like, you know how like you kind of have to rest yourself into a hug? I feel like we all got there and we were kind of like this, and then by the end of the trip we had kind of like built just, it was a little safe net for the four of us to be ourselves.
Wow. You exhaled.
We exhaled.
Yeah.
Oh my God. We're so cliche.
And wait, how long were y'all there?
We were there for I think like 8 or 9 days.
Wow.
Yeah, so we did Santorini and we did Paris.
See, the fact that you could just pick up and in a couple of weeks just be like, I'm going to Greece and France.
Sometimes it's a sacrifice, Drew.
Listen, I understand
You made that sacrifice.
You did. Right.
It was
a beautiful one,
my
too.
My dad was like, she's never going to forget this.
And the fact, that you were able, like, you know, that when we're able to do for our parents, that does something for us, doesn't
it?
It
was cool. So Simone and I got really close doing Paradise Blue, which was really fun, and it was just such a beautiful experience. And the men in that show, you know, Keith Randolph Smith is this big teddy bear. Francois is like this kind of mysterious geek. He's so geeky about so many things, but he's also just such like a calm presence and man to be around. And, you know, he brought his baby at one point.
Come on, baby.
And I got to nibble on a leg and I was good. And then we had Alphonse, who was just like this incredibly talented, just raw brother. Like, I just loved working with him and just all of his, you know, who he is, because I'd never met him before. So it was, and it was great to like be able to have an intimate connection with someone like him, because he's a lovely person. So it worked out.
I love that.
And I loved it. I loved it. Every minute.
That's so dope.
Yeah.
That's what's up. So how was the direction different in Paradise Blue with working with Ruben?
You know, I have worked with Ruben before because I did it in Williamstown.
Right.
And then Ruben cast me in Encores, this musical that they did. Oh my gosh, I just forgot the name of it. That's terrible.
It beats like that.
It's the one with
the literally
angels.
Beats like that.
Oh, it's the Cabin in the Sky.
The Cabin in the Sky. Yeah.
And you know, the part was, Ruben calls everything an ensemble piece, but I'm like, no Ruben, there are still principal players.
Right.
And I was like new, coming out, you know. And Ruben had me come in and I played like a featured ensemble role. And I said, well, you know, if I'm going to do this, like, can I shadow you? And he was like, no.
Oh.
He was like, you can assist me. So I ended up working with him as an assistant director, as well as being a performer in the piece.
Oh, wow.
And that was really incredible for me because, one, I got to see how his mind works.
Yeah.
So going,
because he does a different thing.
He does a different thing. And getting to have like a taste of that from behind the table
scenes,
and seeing why he does what the way he does.
Because he got those August influences.
Completely.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
All of that is in there. And getting to show up in a room with him knowing his style and why he does what he does, it took away all of my actor, can I say bullshit?
Yeah, yeah. Come on now.
It took away all my actor bullshit because it was just like, I didn't take notes a certain way or I understood why he was asking me to do the things he was asking me to do. Because I started to understand.
Instead of trying to defend yourself.
Yeah, instead, and you know, when I get a note, it was just like, I'm going to try it that way. Right. Because there's a reason I should try it that
way. Oh, I love that,
Something about the way I'm doing it isn't working. And you know, that's
hard.
That's taking time too. Because there was a time it was like, every note was like, you know, just like an internal struggle.
Like, oh my God, like you just stabbed me in my heart.
A monologue would just flow out of me. I just was embarrassed and breath, you know, just like, well, I did it because.
Right.
So it was just really lovely to walk back in the room with Ruben, who's just, you know, and they love Detroit. So much so that I packed up my bags.
And went to Detroit.
And went to Detroit.
Really?
Oh, yeah.
And it just worked out nicely.
Something about that thing in Detroit is popping. You know, you get on that little train, you get to the little casino.
I had to see it from
myself. Go downtown. Like, you know what I'm saying? Detroit be popping.
Why a casino?
Because the casino be popping in Detroit. You know, they have the buffets in there. And you know what I'm saying? You get to gamble a little bit. Like, you could smoke it. I used to go because I could smoke inside the buildings. I just like to go and be able to. That was one of the one places you could go and smoke and still smoke inside.
Detroit
popping
like that. Drew.
You went to museums.
We went to museums.
Oh, I ain't never been in a museum.
He said, look.
I went to the Woolworth. Look, I went to the club.
I don't be doing a nigga
shit. I was down there being black and gay.
I was down there being black and gay.
You know what I'm saying? Shit I couldn't do at home. Okay? Started being black again because I couldn't be gay at home.
Smoking, drinking.
Right, smoking and drinking.
Doing
right.
That shit I love.
Right, hello. Walking around being free.
Drew, shit. I feel like you were born in the wrong era, Drew. I feel like you were supposed to be born in like the 20s or something.
Listen, I would be dead.
With that comb
on
your head.
Have we talked about that before?
Yes.
With nigga be like, no.
With the way my mouth is set up, I would have been dead.
Nigga, what?
Do you hear me? Like, you got me all the way fucked up. And I'm light-skinned and pretty, too. You got me all the way fucked up to think you're going to be talking to me crazy or treating me like I can't take it now.
All right, then 2018 is right where you should
be. Thank you. I'm so glad that I am because I can't take it now.
But you know what? When people ask those questions on Twitter, like, what era would you go back to if you could?
There's always white people.
Every single time, I'm like,
I
would rather stay here.
Right, and I don't even want to be here.
Can I go to the future?
Right. Just where I don't have to. Can I go to Wakanda?
Please.
Come on now.
Send me anywhere. Anywhere.
Like some vibranium.
Right. Hello? Shit. Blow all this shit up.
Fuck what you heard.
But yeah, so I love Detroit. Mm-hmm. And so I'm glad you got to experience that.
I did. And I took my parents to that. And we had an uncle that I hadn't seen in like 10 years. So we got to see him and hang out with his family. And it was just, I just was impressed with the whole history of the city and the impression the impression that it has made in the veins and the DNA of this country.
That's what's up.
Oh,
I love
absolutely.
It.
Wow. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I mean, when I think about like, I'm sorry.
No, go ahead.
The Temptations, the musical.
Right. Yes. Ain't Too Proud.
I saw it in
written
DC.
Written by Dominique. Did you?
I saw it in
DC.
And first off, I took Amber. And I was like, she was like, she's like, I don't know.
Oh, you know how Amber
is. Yes, exactly. She was like, I don't know.
We'll see.
The best part of that experience in DC
is seeing
not
her.
Only was seeing Amber in a sea of chocolate men who could also staring at her, but also to watch.
Wait, none of them was on stage?
No.
Oh, okay.
I'm talking
about
like out at night.
Yes.
I was going to say, I don't even look at her.
I'm so done with you, Drew.
Like, wait, what show is that?
What's that? What did you say?
Like, okay.
Wait, do I need to bleep that?
No, it's okay. It's all right.
Okay.
It's all right. Anyway, so yes, seeing her come alive at the end of the curtain call, she jumped to her feet.
Wow.
I felt so vindicated.
Now, you know when Amber jumped to her feet. You know when Amber jumped to her feet on the show, you know it's good.
Come through.
I did. I kept looking at her like, I can't believe you don't believe me that
this is good.
Be as good as I think it is.
Well, Dominique puts a book together.
Yes.
She puts a story together.
Yes, she does.
Mm-hmm. She's a dynamic, a brilliant storyteller. So
she's a genius.
Yeah,
she got quite literally.
She's a genius.
A MacArthur genius.
And there was a text chain in the cast, like, yo, can you lend me some money?
Right. Of course.
I already know what.
That's good.
Right. Like, I know you got a little, can I get 5 G's? You know what I'm saying?
Just like black people.
Just like black people.
So, Dominique, do you want to sponsor Broadway Black?
Like, what are your next move?
Right. What's happening?
Are you into, like, producing
it? What's all? You know, do you want to be a financial, you know, blessing? Just be a blessing.
Because you got the coin.
Okay. Look, we all know. We really.
We all know.
But if anybody is going to use that for, like,
good.
Horses,
oh, my God. Oh, my God. I mean.
You will never meet a non-lazy person in your life.
When I tell you that I'm fully expecting some type of dynamic artist housing or something to, like.
Oh, it's going
to
be spectacular.
Something just, like, something that only she could
think of and do.
I promise
you. It's not going to be basic.
Yeah, it's not going to be. Yeah, and I cannot wait to see it. I'm so proud and happy for her. But, yeah. So I'm so glad you got to see that, and I'm hoping that y'all get to see it. It's coming to Broadway, y'all, so make sure I get your tickets for
Y'all better see it.
Yeah, it's going to be in that thing.
Tripping,
niggas. Please get your tickets. It's so good.
We've learned all about Crystal and Lloyd.
Hey.
We're going to move on into what we're going through this week. So, Danya, you've been in previews for Fireflies. You open tomorrow.
We open tomorrow.
He got his look, and he won't tell me what it is. He's always trying to make me wait to see the look.
You want
to
wait tomorrow, motherfucker.
I guess.
What's up?
Now I gotta go shopping. I feel like I gotta go to a vintage store tomorrow to get my look together because I don't know if I have it.
Oh,
come through.
I feel like I gotta pull up a little bit more.
Come through. You always pull up though. So
well, you know that's part of my aesthetic. But you know maybe I need a little bit, a couple more stairs.
I might see y'all at the party.
Come through.
I can't come to the show because I'm performing tomorrow night.
Get your life.
Come. Where are you performing at?
Broadway Stands Up for Freedom. It's with the ACLU.
Oh, okay. I was gonna say some white. I don't know nothing about that. you're probably the only black person on the bill. Are you?
I never look at these things.
You don't? Why?
I can't look at these things.
Why?
Because I don't want to go in feeling some type of way.
She just want to show up.
Right.
Do what she
got to
do. Get the coin.
I want to put out my good energy. I want to put out the good energy that I got.
And that's a good way of looking at it.
And that's why I love you so, so much. Because even when I approached you and I thought you were mad at me and I was telling you, I said, I thought you didn't like me for the longest time. You even, like, you lifted me up. And you still do that. You still reach out to me and say, you know what? Like, I'll be on my Instagram story doing some shit. She's like, that voice is going to heal hearts.
I know that's right.
She just reaches out and just
come on now
comes through with the come through. Like you listen, I love you so much. So I love that you do that
through.
Because you remind me that I need to do that because you know I'm cynical.
Oh, same here.
And I've been jaded by this industry.
Oh,
so
yeah,
my
yeah.
go-to is like a joke or you know. And sometimes it's not the best. But I believe in my mind that this business was not built for us. And so I often see that.
Yeah.
And I try to like get past that.
Not a lie.
I really try to get past that and I'm trying to work through that because I want to see the good in everyone and I want to see, but it's difficult.
It's taken a lot of therapy for me to get to this point. And you know when I started the therapy?
When?
When I started Dear Evan Hansen.
Ooh.
Wow.
So it takes a lot. It's taken a lot of therapy.
Yeah.
So, because the business can be very
fickle.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They can be tricky, but I'm like so grateful for whatever happened in whatever time in those 2 years, good, bad, because so much good stuff happened.
Yeah.
You know, but I hear you. It's hard to walk into certain situations feeling like, because this is what black people do. Like, he says something about this right here, and you immediately said, make sure they know we didn't do it.
Well, she's pointing at she's pointing at, there's a device here.
You just said that.
Because
that's real.
And that's
because
automatically.
I have been in rented spaces.
That's so real. You just said
who
that.
Are not of melanin. And if something is like, oh, this mic is wonky, no one's worried about it coming back at them.
Yeah, we are always worried.
Wow.
Like, she's pointing at there's a thing here that houses the headphones
and
so we can
all
hear
of that.
What we're saying and stuff while we're recording, and something had happened to it, and he said you might hear a little buzz, and I said, oh, well, I don't want them to blame us, you know, since we're in here with, you know, and who knows if they know it's wonky
but that's
or not,
something
you know
black
what I mean?
People got to do,
and we innate.
Hate to think that.
Yeah.
So the minute you walk into a situation where you don't see another person like you, there is an innate DNA thing that makes you go. You clock that, and you clock everything from there on out how you are perceived, and it's hard. I'm not even saying that Dear Evan Hansen was some kind of bad experience. Like they were so awful to me. I'm not saying that
at all.
But you put me in a situation as a black woman to be the only
black woman,
black woman,
black and black person.
I mean, there was not, and you know. you can help it, you can't help it. I'm sure they have reasons and what, it doesn't matter.
Well, they, point well, is in I my have, opinion, mm-hmm. go ahead.
I'll it's like when it comes to like, we just need more black producers.
Right.
We need more black theater owners. Because some of these things, it's like, I could be mad at them for not having anybody on the creative team that's black, but I'm like, but you know what, where are the black kids who are showing up and saying, I'm gonna like, you know, chart your music,
right.
wanna be your assistant. It's like, how do we get those kids into these rooms? I'm not even saying they're not trying, I'm right. saying, how do we get them into these rooms?
Yeah.
So as a black person, it's like, it is emotionally taxing every day to show up at a place where you don't know if you're going to be protected or looked out for, because it's emotionally taxing. You have to spend mm-hmm. every day kind of like learning how to be yourself in this environment with these people.
Wow. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And
is myself enough?
Is myself mm-hmm. enough?
Am I going to be okay?
You know what mm-hmm. I mean? And it's it took time, but
man, I'm so glad that you yeah. said that, because I have been trying to find the words to process that, and I know that I talk about it a lot on this mm-hmm. show, but it's because of the fact that trying to blaze a path that nobody else has done before mm-hmm. and working in spaces with white people that will not look out for you, that mm-hmm. will take advantage of you, that will stretch you thin, mm-hmm. that will stress you out. Mm-hmm. It's emotionally yeah. taxing. And
you're asked to be vulnerable, especially in a rehearsal room. You're asked to be up there in front of these people.
To open yourself up.
Being
yeah.
as vulnerable and making yourself, you know, I have to serve the role of Evan.
Right.
You see what I'm saying? So it's like everything I do on stage is to serve the role of Evan.
Yeah.
And to serve this story and this piece. But if you're self-conscious and constantly, you know, just not feeling like you have the confidence in yourself, you don't love yourself, because I struggle with that, yeah. you know? And I'm sure we all can mm-hmm. relate to that as yeah, artists.
Definitely.
But how do you walk into a room where you're already insecure?
Mm. Yes.
And you're like, and now there's nobody here to look out for me.
Nobody mm-hmm. to support me. Yeah.
No one.
Wow.
Yeah.
Child. Woo! Yeah. My God. Okay.
You better speak that.
Listen, that was a thing.
You better speak all of that.
But Fireflies, mm-hmm. in your process with previews, and we're opening mm-hmm. tomorrow.
We open.
How you feeling?
Bad boy tomorrow. Nigga's exhausted.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because you're working on like 3 and 4 other things right now
mm-hmm.
too.
Yeah,
can we talk about any of those things
we
yet?
We cannot talk about God. Any single one of them yet. But as soon as I get the okay, y'all will know.
You are planting those seeds.
Yes, indeedy.
Listen,
yes, indeedy.
He doing more than planting the seeds.
This is mm-hmm. a time of like, what is it called? You just gotta like, is it reaping?
You know how, okay, so you know how when actors, like book projects and then they go on film and they be like in production and then they be post-production and then all of a sudden it just be like one thing after another to just pop up, and you just seem like mm-hmm. damn, you did that movie and did that. When did you do all this mm-hmm. shit? Because we saw you doing this already mm-hmm. but then in the background you were doing this
yeah.
and all of a sudden they just come out boom, boom,
back to
boom,
back
boom.
To back to back
like
to back.
That's Donye right now.
Yeah. I already know yeah. like, I already know
yeah so
like a blow up
like life is God. I was talking to an actress last Sunday night at previews, and she was saying that God is God, instead of saying like God is good, because that's so reductive, mm-hmm. but like God is God, and like that's the space yes. that like I've just been in and really thinking and cultivating, just like God is God. And I was talking about to her every, I think I might have shared this on one of the episodes, I can't remember if it was like on the episode or afterward, but I do a manifestation board every year, and the top of this year on the manifestation board is a word that I speak every single day before I leave the house, and the word for this year is abundance.
Hallelujah.
And that is what's been happening this year, just like an
hallelujah.
Overflow of abundance. And when a nigga can talk about all the abundance, mm-hmm. a nigga
will. Listen.
Okay.
And I'm going to be the first one shout. Me and Brandon
okay.
will be.
Okay. Come through.
Yes.
But right now, I cannot say shit. But yeah, so Fireflies open tomorrow.
Not even about the bucket of chicken.
Not even about the bucket of chicken.
Damn.
I can't say
that's going to be a good... Will we ever be able to talk about that?
It's a possibility, yeah.
Okay.
It's
okay.
a possibility to talk about that.
okay.
But so...
You
y'all want me to spill all the tea.
You
want me to spill all the tea about it all.
I want y'all to make sure y'all ask and tweet Donye and text him or whatever you can do and tell him, it's like, when we going to be able to talk about the bucket of
hashtag
chicken.
Hashtag bucket of chicken.
Right.
Hashtag bucket of chicken. But don't worry, we will know. But so for the past 3 weeks, we've been in previews for Fireflies. And I can't remember if it was the last episode or episode before you were talking about because you and Brandon came to the first preview
mm-hmm.
and I was over it.
You were over it.
I was completely over it.
Yeah.
It took me a while.
Oh, because you listened to the show and you weren't here and I was talking
about
it. Yeah,
okay. And I listened to it.
Was you mad at me?
No, I wasn't mad at you at all. I was mad at myself.
Why?
I was mad at myself for presenting that work. I didn't feel proud of it. It was, and you talked
and I told
about
you
it.
You were in your head about it. Yeah, I'm thinking like, nigga, this is great.
No, it was, and so here's the thing with my work and on the page, how it was written, what I love so much, what I love to write is I love to write about the body and what the body does. I'm really interested in how the body responds to grief, mm-hmm. how the body responds to joy, how the body responds to love, to a multitude of emotions. I enjoy the body more so than I enjoy language. Mm. And I try to marry the two. So like in my text, there are spells, right? Where is a character's name and a character's name and no dialogue. And that can be like an entire page. And I'm interested in like what that means. Like what is the body saying? Because we can talk and talk and talk, but we can be
body,
lying through the skin of our teeth.
And
the body will never lie.
Yes.
So I'm really interested in that. So I have built in spells within my work. I have built in moments of silence and pauses and all of those things. Mm-hmm. And so throughout a lot of the preview process, I could just tell that the rhythm was off. And there were some things that I built into the play, some spells, some moments of silence and these pauses that
were not
weren't
being
needed
conjured.
At all. Not yet, not so much being conjured. That was one element. But then also that a nigga didn't need to put that in there because that wasn't necessary in that moment. And so it was really racking my brain for 2 weeks. We had a 3 week preview process. And for literally 2 weeks, I kept going back to the play, like doing rewrites, doing edits, taking things out, moving things around just to really get it to a place. That like I needed to be at. And like I've been looking at the performance reports that's been coming in like after every show and it's like it's getting better and better.
Yeah.
And it's locked in and people are like in the rhythm, know the rhythm, and I feel strong in the work now. When you and Brandon came, I did not feel strong.
Good.
At all.
That makes me happy because you know I don't seeing you like that.
Yeah, it was.
But I understand that's part of your process.
Yeah.
And so I was very reserved in my commentary. Because it just wasn't ready for you. Like it wasn't ready for commentary. There was nothing that I could say or do to make you feel any better about it. You know what I mean? And so
that's a real place.
Yeah.
That's a real place.
And you know, and you know, I love a good commentary.
But and I was just, I was trying not to feel defeated because being in that space, I wouldn't be able to be a good playwright.
Yeah.
So I had to get over that and get over myself and get over my ego and serve the work the best way possible. And then, of course, because we talk about the things that I can't talk about right now. So being in the preview process on top of these other big projects that I also have like executives and people calling me about and giving me notes on and having deadlines for that. So it was like I'm one man.
Right.
How can I get all of these things done and just like navigating and finding balance and like what does balance look like for me and what are those things that are far more important and I'm the most important.
You are.
So having to focus on me and taking those moments when, you know what, Danye, you got to leave this script alone. You have to leave this outline alone, leave this treatment alone right now and rebuild you, focus on you. And a nigga been loving a good lavender bubble bath. Okay.
Yes.
It's been bringing me through.
Come on, lavender.
It's been bringing me through with some good old Epsom salt up in there.
I'm going to get you some eucalyptus, too.
Come through.
Oh, that's a nice.
Yeah. You put
I'm with it.
You put a couple of drops of eucalyptus on the bottom of your shower and let that steam on up in you.
Ooh.
Ooh,
my
good.
God.
I'm
when
with
I tell
it.
You it opens up your whole body.
I'm with it.
I usually do
all
peppermint.
Of it.
Do you do peppermint? Oh.
I will tell you this one story.
Okay.
Brandon put it on Facebook. Trifling ass nigga.
You know he's gonna listen. Jerrica's a fan.
I know he is gonna listen.
Jerrica's been listening to the podcast since
and he's gonna be like, yes, I did. And so he got a bottle of peppermint. I really ain't know what peppermint give. In the full extent to what peppermint can give.
God,
so I give myself a nice bath and I pour a good old bottle of peppermint. I close the door. I give my entire body in the bath. I'm just enjoying. I got Jill Scott playing in the background. For a good, literally, it was just 2 minutes of paradise living my life. And I'm like,
burning.
Why do I feel so hot?
Flames.
Jesus.
What's happening to me?
I'm starting to
but
sweat.
But then it was this weird thing of, now why do I feel so cold?
Ooh!
What's happening right now?
Your body?
It was everywhere.
Like that.
And y'all.
I don't like that.
And y'all. But y'all keep in mind. And y'all, even Chris face is gagging.
That would make me feel like. But y'all like. Am I dead?
But y'all like how I love the first.
Did I just lose? Am I paralyzed? That's where I go.
The first thing I love to do whenever I get into a bath is dip my whole body in. So my head underneath the water. And so I'm like, what is happening? I hop out. I'm burning up. Y'all, mind you, this is like January, February. I hop out. I open up all the windows because it's hot as fuck. Yeah. Like, Danye, it's cold. I'm like, but I'm burning up. And mind you, I love the heat.
You love being hot.
You would tell you, I love the heat.
Oh, my gosh.
But I'm like, I'm burning up. He's like, Danye, it's actually really, really cold. I'm burning up. And then I do get really cold because I have all the windows up. So I have to get underneath the covers. I'm like, I'm still hot now.
Oh, my gosh.
It would be worse. So I'm a little, I say all that to say, I'm a little hesitant.
That's a nightmare.
When you talk about peppermint
oil.
You
gotta do a drop.
Oh,
I don't want to do no drops.
You are triggered. That
okay?
was traumatizing.
Because a nigga literally did a death drop in that peppermint. Okay? So no thank you.
No, Whitney!
Oh, my God.
It was horrible.
Out of here. You almost was
It was
out
horrible.
Of here.
And so when I talk about Brandon trifling ass, because he was laughing the entire time, he couldn't control it.
Brandon,
so,
it's me.
So he has to put on Facebook, y'all should see Danye, his dumb ass. Blah, blah, blah. I'm like, that was supposed to be between us, nigga. Not the whole social media world.
Man, I cannot. Oh, my God.
So, yeah. So
I forgot about that, but
so
that is
funny. So you figured out your me time.
Yes.
It will not be a peppermint.
It will not be. It absolutely will not be. And well, then some, like, other things. That, moving on from Danye's nonsense. Had an internal reading. So MTC commissioned me to write a play.
Bitch, now you know I'm mad at you for this, too. Because
why?
You know I work at MTC.
I listen, do. Blame it on my mind, not on my heart.
That's okay.
Okay?
Because listen, I'm sitting there, so I'm at my desk, and I can see, because I work at the front desk, and so I can see all the spaces,
yeah.
And I know who's in the space, but I didn't look at the calendar for the day. So I come in, and I'm just sitting there chilling. I saw a sign that says the North Star, and I'm just, you know, eating my apples and peanut butter.
Doing what he do.
Yeah, eating my apples and peanut butter, and I'm like, the North Star, that sound like, that's I know that's Danye's play. Did somebody didn't take the North? Did somebody
take that name?
Play?
I know damn well Danye would have told me.
Right, like he be here today. And so I'm like, I just kept looking at the sign. I said, nah, he can't be here. So then the door opens up. They on a break. The door opens up and the black people start coming. I said,
oh no.
I said,
wait.
I said,
plot is thickening.
What's up?
Let this nigga be in here. And I said it loud. I said, let this nigga be in here.
And sure enough.
I said, oh yeah, nigga.
And sure enough.
And I said, he said, hey.
I can see the unveiling of the hands.
Hey! Like, oh, nah, nigga. You in here doing a North Star and nobody told me
because
nothing.
Because literally that oh, hey came from, oh, yeah, Drew is here. And like I said, blame it on my mind, not my heart.
Listen,
my heart.
And this is a whole new cast from what I've seen.
But yeah, it is. Because like I'm just like still exploring, like figuring out like the piece and like.
And a different director?
Who I've been working with, she is slaying the game. She's directing a piece across the country. Malika Oyeyemin. And Stevie Walker Webb, who directed this
Ain't No More.
And from Ain't No More, which will be at the Public. He's somebody who's been on my radar for a minute, who I really want to work with, and it felt like the stars aligned. So I'll say this one little thing. You know the piece.
Mm-hmm.
So it's always so interesting. I will talk about it till the cows come home. Who I love to write about and who I write for are black people, are queer people, are black and queer people at the intersection. Mm-hmm. I let that be known.
Yeah.
And it's always so interesting now with the bulk of these institutions obviously being white institutions. So it was an internal reading for MTC and the bulk of their staff and the people who make the decisions. So Stevie and I are sitting all the way in the back on the second day, which is the day that we had the reading. And then MTC starts piling in. And of course, it's
all white people, right? Mm-hmm. And so I say to Stevie, it's always so frustrating telling these black ass stories, and then you don't see yourself reflected in terms of the people who quote unquote make the decisions for the stories that get to be told, that get to be on stage. Mm-hmm. And so the piece talks about a multitude of things. And one of the things it talks about is the prison industrial complex. So Stevie says, quick as a whip, oh, don't worry, my nigga, I got you. Mm. And I'm like, oh, what? What he about to do? So when he gets up to introduce the piece and just like set the tone, he starts counting off 1 through 5. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. Every fifth person has to stand up. Mm. And Stevie is a bomb ass director. He's
How many
also,
people were in this room?
It might have been maybe 15 to 20 people, maybe like 15. And so, like I said, Stevie is bombmaster director and a holistic director as well, and really cultivating a space where the ancestors are welcomed and present and operating from that aesthetic. Mm. And so I'm like, what the fuck is this nigga about to do having like these people stand up? So once every number five person stood up, he says, in America, every 1 in 5 black males are sent to jail. So the people standing right now represent within this room the black men that are in prison right now.
Wow.
And everyone who's sitting down are the moms, are the children, are the grandparents. Mm. And so he was like, I just want, as we're getting into this play, I need for you all to realize that. And this is what's happening to the black community, with the black community. So like just that, just having a director who was brave enough and who understood the piece enough to even like implement that into something as simple as an internal reading.
So
that was a part of
that's
my time off and just like all of this.
Well, I wanted to share something. Yes, I'm going to talk about my week, but I wanted to share something too that you were just speaking about. So this playwright Ike Holter had something that he wanted to say. He said, this has been on my mind a lot. If you get me, you get me. He says, in quotations, we really like the play, but does it have to be set in Chicago? This script is great, but we worry our audience won't understand what Chicago is. Have you thought about putting the action in New York? He said, I get this shit constantly, laugh out loud, and it's weird. As we speak, I'm supposed to respond to a great large organization and explain to them that no, the play they want is still going to be set in Chicago, and no, people won't have a hard time figuring out what Chicago is. I see show after show that takes place in New York. They talk about their city like it's a character. When will that phrase die? As a kid, I knew street names, store chains, and zip codes from growing up watching movies, TV, and plays set in that city. I hadn't ever been to New York, but I could tell you a million things about the differences between Brooklyn and the Bronx. For some reason, it's completely acceptable and encouraged to write as specifically as possible about New York. The fact that a character in any film can say, I'm from Chelsea, Midtown, the Upper West Side, and get a laugh shows us how much we all know about how NY presents itself. But when Chicago comes up, forget about it. It's cold. It's always cold. Chicago means ethnic and dirty and black on black and undocumented neighborhoods and non-white majority. To deal with the specificity, I can't even speak.
Come
to
on
deal
down.
With the specificity in a city that means the work in a question will take place where many people's greatest fears reside. It's not hard to figure out that a character saying go to the Jewel means a grocery store. It's not difficult to figure out what someone holding a moo and an oink bucket means. When someone says they're going down Lakeshore Drive, you don't need to Google to find information. Look, I think more shit needs to take place in Chicago, and I'm so damn happy every time something takes place here. It's legit exciting. It's important for people to see images of us that aren't nightmare scenarios from our president or our mayor begging the Olympics to come so he can get a ride of the South Side, and any positive representation is not only welcome, it's necessary. Seeing a place you've never been to tells an audience that people live there, not headlines, but actual human beings. So yeah, I don't know. I just wanted to say that I'm sick of having these conversations. Some of them even happen in this city where old white dudes won't think twice about putting up shows in alternate dimensions that require a fucking key in the program to understand location. But we'll never produce a local writer writing about their city because old whites feel deeply for trolls and witches. If you ask them to see a show set with actually brown people, they will collapse. We want respect, and that means ignoring our own community and chasing something more legitimate, and it's bullshit. Because what we have is more than enough, and that shit is worth something. We're forced to understand London and New York and LA and every piece of entertainment, emphasize with the plight of the people and the specificity of their location. Chi is the third largest city in the country. Shit is not that complicated. Okay, so I said that to basically say that
he is talking about setting all his, because all his work is really set in Chicago, because that's where he's from. But having to explain that to some, to you know, larger institutions, and explain to them that
it's tiring.
This is real. Like, these are people. We're not going to keep doing the same old one-dimensional thing because that's what you think of Chicago. Let's change the narrative. And that's what you often have to do, is change the people's viewpoints on what they think they, what they think they're seeing. You know what I mean? And so I thought that that was just really unique. That's what you reminded me of that.
Yeah.
But anyway, I'll move on.
But yeah, it's, I get 100%. It's super duper. It's extremely tiring. And like, there's been so many conversations when I'm talking to like artistic directors and having to like fight for shit. And like, no, I'm not going to do that. That might mean, and then also it's so interesting because having to figure out exactly like the way to navigate certain conversations, because I could be looked at as that black gay ass writer who is difficult, who won't do this, who won't do that, and so be it. But like, letting people know. So I understand exactly what he's talking about, how tiring like this shit is, of having to speak for, it feels like you're speaking for all of your people all the time when you get in certain spaces. When I'm just speaking for Danye. I'm speaking for Danye.
And your experience.
Exactly. I'm not speaking for all of Philly. I'm not speaking for all of blackness. I'm not speaking for all of queerness.
You're telling a specific story.
But yeah,
I love that. Okay. So, I mean, I know that rambled on about that whole post. I probably didn't even read that right because I was just like trying to get through it.
It was called Fire and Passion.
You know?
And Necessary.
Yeah, but if you know Ike Hulter, please, he is like one of the best people as this like activist, or I guess you could say, for like Facebook. People that you see all to, you know, a lot that really have some viewpoints that you want to like, yes, like you want to shout on, like Chris Lynn does, and Danye does, and Dominique Mariso, and you know, all the great, the greats in the industry. But my week was really great. I've just been on my health journey.
I've been seeing.
Yeah, you know, and I'm staying focused. I'm in it. Like, you know, I got my little gym bag with me today. I have my little apples and peanut butter. You know, Crystalline, you know, went in. Yeah,
this nigga don't be playing, y'all.
I am
at all.
But you know, and I was just telling you too that
them crisp apple slices.
Listen,
well, he was enjoying.
Okay, they crunching down.
Hello.
Okay.
But I'm just
chewing so loud.
Enjoying.
I forgot I finished mine. I'm like, chewing. Does that mean chewing? I'm messing.
I'm enjoying just rebuilding my foundation.
Amen.
I've gotten to a place where I just said no more. No more will I self-medicate or self-sabotage myself. And that's what I've been doing for a long time. And I love weed. I love smoking weed. I think it's great. And it worked for me until it didn't.
Until it didn't.
Until it did not anymore. And
was there like a certain point where the weed just didn't work, or it just happened that way?
It sort of just happened. Like, I, you know, when I came back from vacation from Puerto Rico, you know, I smoked all through Puerto Rico. Like, I was down in Old San Juan getting my weed every day. And so I smoked in Puerto Rico, and then when I came back, because I had drank every day too, so I've been drinking. So I was like, let me stop drinking. Like, I had just drank so much. And so I was like, let me just give my body a break. And I started doing other things. And so then I was coming up on the Preacher's Wife workshop. And so I was like, let me stop smoking. Like, let me stop smoking cigarettes. I stopped smoking cigarettes because of that. Because I wanted to have, because we was parking and barking. Like, so I wanted to make sure I was prepared for that. And so I stopped smoking cigarettes, and that just sort of took its thing. And then the weed came is because if I smoke weed, I want to smoke a cigarette. If I smoke a cigarette, I want to have a glass of wine. It's all connected for
right.
me. Because I've been doing it for 18 years. All of that is a part of it. And so I said, well, I have to find a way to get rid of this as well, because it's not serving me anymore. It's not doing what it used to do for me anymore. And so I had to, I just said, let me just stop for 90 days. Let me see. But I'm 14 days into no weed.
Wow.
I am, you know, a little bit over, like about 2 months in no drinking. I am, you know, a month and a half in to no cigarettes. But it's easier for me because I have sort of to address my trauma, the things that have, that have traumatized me or affected me as a child and growing up, and sort of have made me, you know, sort of have to self-medicate.
Oh my gosh, when we had that conversation that day,
yes.
I was talking about that with you.
Yes.
Just, yeah.
Yep.
Yeah.
It's a breath of fresh air. I no longer have to walk past, you know, I was also talking to Lee about this. And he said to me, he said, you know, he realized that something was
going on when he said he had to walk. He walked past the mirror and he felt like he had to pull up and suck in his stomach in front of himself. He's like, I can't even look at myself in the mirror. That I have to pull, I have to suck in and pull up just to be able to look at me.
Wow.
Something is wrong.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Mm. And so that's what I was doing. I was literally having a difficult time to looking in my face. I would see dark circles underneath my eyes because I wasn't sleeping properly. I was drinking. I was, you know, getting high. And that worked for, I was okay with that. You know what I mean? And so I don't want anybody to think that, that I was like down, like, you know, sometimes I was in a depression and sometimes I wasn't, but you know, even if I wasn't, I was still smoking weed. I was okay with that. And so I don't want anyone to think that that they have to do what it is that I'm doing to live a full life or a better life. That's not what I'm saying.
This is your journey.
This is mine. And I'm not dismissing anybody that uses other ways to cope and to live and their life. But I'm saying at this point in my journey, in my life, I am in the process of facing myself head on. I'm done with the self-sabotage. I am done with allowing myself to feel defeated before I even begin.
Hey.
You know what I mean?
You said that.
And I'm using my time now a little bit more wisely, because I have to, because if I don't get up and like go to the gym or do something with my body that sort of gets those endorphins moving, like a blunt would have done that for me. The blunt, I would wake up and I would roll a blunt. That would be my therapy. Just even the process, not even just the smoking part, the process of the rolling, of the breaking the weed. Yeah. It was a ritual for me.
It felt really familiar.
It felt so familiar. And I would use a lot of my time to do that. So I would roll a blunt. I would be in the middle rolling a blunt. I would cook breakfast. I would do things. I would smoke and
come on, multitask. Come on, multitask.
And that would be my time. And that would take me about an hour, hour and a half. And now I use that time and I go to the gym and I get on the treadmill. I listen to music. I do things that do something for my brain to get me moving. And if I don't, I find that I have a difficult time. So I don't like going to the gym in the evening. Sometimes I have to, because I have to be at work early in the morning. Or I have some place to be and I'm out later than I want to. So I'm trying to find the balance within my schedule as far as doing that too. But you know, God is just so awesome, because he knew that I was going to go into this journey the first week of October. And the way I work at a Manhattan Theater Club, she did not put me on the schedule for the first week of October. And I said, I pulled her to the side. And I said, "Is there a reason why?" Because you know, I like to,
I like to figure out what's up.
I like to lay what's in. Up? I like to lay into the whites. Whenever any opportunity that I get, I like to lay into the whites. Yeah, I lay in. I get a hard lean into the whites.
I know you do.
I once heard somebody say, "White people show up." You know, if white people show up to a theater, they're like, you know, I hope no one's taking our seats. You know, we're late.
Yes.
Black people show up late to a theater like, I wish somebody would be in my seat.
Okay. Like, I don't care how late I am.
Very that.
My seats. I
could come at curtain call.
Right.
Why you in my seat?
Why you in my seat?
Why you in my seat?
I'm ready to fight.
Okay.
So I was just in a place where I was ready to like go into her. And
I'm already laughing
because so I approached her because she's new, so this is the first time really doing the schedule and stuff. She's new to the company, and so I said, "Is there a reason why I wasn't on the schedule for the first week?" She said, "Oh, well, you know, I knew that you were gonna pick up somebody else, because sometimes I pick up because I'm going to be there working on my shit."
Right.
So sometimes I'll pick up a shift for somebody else if they need it. And she said, "Well, I just figured that you would pick up, and I didn't want you to go over your part time hours." And this is, and I said, "Well, that's extra." I said, "What I'm doing and doing that is to help you.
I need a schedule.
I need a real schedule.
You can't not
just
put me
on
the
schedule for a week
and then
you think,
say, 'Oh, well, he's going to pick up something.' No, this is a part-time job because you need to offer me part-time hours." Okay.
So I said, "Well, you've just messed up my money, because I'm not doing this for any other reason but the extra coin." So you just messed up my money. So now I'm going to go a week without a check. And that's a problem for me. So if I go and find another job this week, don't be mad, is what I told her. You know, I wouldn't go find another job. I don't really care that much to go and find another job. But I'm telling her, so
don't be mad.
What she was doing was unethical. She was not allowed to do that, because she needs to offer you the part-time hours. That is part of your obligation as their
employee.
But see,
because they set the schedule for the entire month, I think that she had put me an extra day, but I also don't want to be there 4 days a week. I don't want to be there day after day after day, feeling like that feels like full time, because I got to get up out of my bed four days out of the week.
Like, what the fuck?
I don't care how many hours I'm here. If I have to get up
4 days out of the week. That feels full time to me.
Like, I need benefits.
So
I need benefits.
So right, seriously. So I you know, I thought about it for a minute. And said, you know what, God, whatever. Just something is brewing here, something that you need me to do. So that first week I was able to not go to the job and not worry about that interfering with my new lifestyle, my new physical and my energy and going to the gym.
You had a staycation.
I had a staycation where I was able to get up and go and sort of figure out what my body needed to be able to really go on this journey for physical health. Because I failed gym class, y'all. I was not.
You
I was
did not,
not
fail.
Oh, yes, I did.
It's not a fail course, is it?
Well,
if you got to show up.
Oh, you just didn't show up.
I was not getting dressed for gym.
Gotcha.
I was not going. I was gay. I was not going into the locker room.
This nigga.
I was not getting dressed for the gym class.
This nigga said I was gay.
So
like that should literally be the end of it. Like you don't gotta say nothing else. I was gay.
Like I was not getting dressed. I was not about to be bullied. I was not about to be playing basketball. This wasn't my ministry.
Gotcha.
You know, give me a field day all day, boo. You know what I'm saying? Give me a tug of war.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? But I'm not about to play basketball. I'm not playing dodgeball. I'm not. My hands are soft. You feel that?
I know.
As he makes her touch his hands.
Yes, my hands are soft.
Just in case you didn't know.
He didn't offer them. He put them on my hands. He said, my hands are soft. You want to feel? I get that.
So I wasn't doing, I'm not physical like that. That's
meanwhile,
not my ministry.
I lived in this ambivalent space when it came to gym because it's like, I don't want to do this shit, but oh, look at these boys.
Listen.
I lived in this ambivalent, like, ooh, I'm so conflicted right now. What am
so
I going to do?
They fine.
What am I don't want to be here. Right. I ain't going to play ball with y'all niggas.
Right, but y'all fine.
But let me see a ball.
Right. Look, swinging.
Slang-a-lang-a-lang-lang.
Like, okay, okay.
You know I forgot.
But no, I know you didn't. Oh. But so, yeah, that just was my ministry. So trying to be physical and starting to work out and lift weights, when I tell you I was in the bed crippled this first week.
Yeah.
Like.
Yeah. I'm laughing because.
Why did your hands?
Because he demonstrated.
That's what it was. It was the hands that went.
I feel like this whole sex needs to be a bleep. This whole section needs to be a bleep.
Because you look like...
Okay.
I'm not even going to describe what you
look like. Because this is not politically correct.
I didn't even say nothing.
You did something. So that's just...
You
the funny thing to Drew, sometimes you don't even got to say shit. He just do shit.
Oh, God.
But like... because I said crippled...
He don't even get it. Oh, that's the thing that fascinates me. This nigga don't even get it.
But you know what I'm saying, though. Like I was literally like in the bed, just
debilitated.
I mean,
debilitated.
Oh my God. Mm-hmm. Like I felt like my arms were broken. Mm-hmm. I felt like I was having to rub the muscles all day long.
Yeah.
Like I could not move.
Yeah.
I mean, I was in the Epsom salt bath. I was doing everything I could. But I got over that because I kept going. I forced myself to do it. But I needed that week. I didn't realize I needed that week. Why are you?
I'm trying to see you. I wish I saw you in bed that day. Just huddled over.
I tell you,
arms.
I wish.
Like
I
literally, I literally was just sitting there, just rubbing my arms consistently, and it just felt like it was. I needed a sling.
Oh,
I needed a sling.
How amazing do you feel now?
I feel great.
Come on now.
That's what it does.
And I want to do it. Again,
that's
come on now.
Because now it doesn't hurt like
it's
it
called
did.
Endurance. Hey,
endurance.
Just get on it. Come on now.
I built up the endurance, and so I'm excited to do it. I'm
now
excited
it's
to
a challenge.
Go.
Yeah, it's no a longer challenge. A chore. It's a challenge.
Right.
We love a challenge.
We do love a challenge.
Come on now.
Don't want a chore, but I love a challenge.
Yes.
Hey. Yeah.
And so I'm just in that place where I have addressed my trauma head on. I am talking about the things that have hurt me, that have caused me to, you know, go down into depression. I've talked to the people that have been a part of that, you know, family that has been a part of that. I've addressed people that have made me feel like I was less than, even just, you know, people from my own hometown having conversations about me being gay and saying that God loves me and God loves that I'm gay, you know, and people do not
accept that. Mm-hmm. They don't want to see that. And so when I present that, and
you're messing with the hard wiring there, Drew.
Oh yeah,
that is a hard wiring from birth.
But
so
you see that.
That's a glitch. But now
I'm in a place where you cannot tell me, mm-hmm. especially if you don't, if you've never gone through what I've gone through, if you're not a gay person,
because niggas have been trying to tell you
for a long time,
creeping in on the creep in,
and like on the slide, yes. and say, well, you know, I love you anyway. Don't fake love me.
Don't fake love me.
Don't, you know, you can just go. You can go because you have not added anything to me. You've only brought me down. Mm-hmm. And I'm no longer in a place where I'm going to accept or tolerate Amen. Being tolerated. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? You're not just going to tolerate me. You know what I mean? If you can't love me as a whole human mm-hmm. being, then I don't need you here. Mm-hmm. There's nothing that I can offer you. There's nothing that you can offer me. You can go. Mm-hmm. And that is immediate family. Mm-hmm. That is, you know,
I think they forget it's an identity.
Yeah.
Don't.
But people think that it's a choice.
Oh,
that
that's chosen. Yes, of course.
And so that's where we differ. And so mm-hmm. when you think that something that I, why would I ever choose this mm-hmm. life? Mm. That makes no sense to me. Why would I be choose to be ridiculed? Mm-hmm. Why would I choose to feel ostracized? Mm-hmm. Why would I choose to feel like people won't love me? You know what I mean? Why would I ever choose that?
Yeah.
That's something that has been in, that has just grinded my gears. And when I started to do the research and study scripture for myself mm-hmm. and have a, and go to God for myself mm-hmm. and pray over things and study things for myself mm-hmm. instead of being a parrot and regurgitating what has been fed to me yeah. all of my life. Mm-hmm. Oh, the sense of freedom that I feel. Mm-hmm.
Because in God there is freedom.
Oh mm-hmm. my God.
And peace.
And love and understanding. Mm-hmm. And because I'm in that place now, and it's fresh, you know what I'm saying? We're like 2 months, mm-hmm. you know, really 2 weeks in, because now my mind is a little bit more clear without the haze of weed. And I love weed. Like, I don't ever want somebody to feel like I am saying that you can't smoke weed, because I'm eventually going to be smoking weed again. In due time, in a way that is healthy for me. And so I want people to do it in a way that's healthy for them, because it is of the earth and it does open up and it does different things for different people. Mm-hmm. There are different strains, there are different types. There are so many different things that it can do for you medically and all of that good shit. But I just being in a place where I'm able to see clearly for myself and make decisions for myself and not think like, oh, what is this person going to think of me? Or, oh, what is this person going to say about this? And trying to live up to a perception. Mm-hmm. I'm no longer like, it is just chains.
Amen.
Just broken chains.
Well, like, we develop a codependence.
Yeah.
At a young age for very specific reasons, for mm-hmm. whatever trauma we experience, and that codependence lasts.
Yeah.
So when you're talking about, you know, I'm rebuilding the foundation, I'm putting in these practices, I think a lot of times we fall off the wagon because we forget that, you know, some of these things are so deep that it has to be daily.
Yeah.
And mm-hmm. it's not about reaching a destination or a goal weight. It's actually about continuing to
change,
take care of yourself
yeah.
every day and watch the
consistency.
Evolution. It's the process. Yeah. It's the process. Mm-hmm.
That's right. What it is at the end of the
but
day.
But you know, sometimes you can't explain. Like, I've heard that for over the years. I've read books about it. I've talked about it mm-hmm. with people. I've had conversations. And I've had days where it felt like, okay, I'm on this. I'm ready.
Mm-hmm.
And then I wasn't ready.
Mm-hmm.
And then it clicked. And then it didn't click. Mm-hmm. But there's something that really, like, you really know when it really clicks for you. Mm-hmm. Like, it's just, there's nothing that you can explain. There's nothing that anybody can tell you.
And you're the only one that knows.
And you're the only one that knows. Mm-hmm. And so it's like, almost like, oh my God, I want to share this with everyone.
Mm-hmm.
I want to talk about this change that I feel. And now my action is starting to show mm-hmm. what I feel. Even though I felt it before, my body is now starting to move in a way that complements the feeling.
Mm-hmm.
That's the change for me. That's yeah. what clicked for me, where it just like, I was just telling my friend, Fran, hey, Fran, and she's like all into spiritual mm-hmm. Guidance mm-hmm. and like just, you know, meditating and all of that good stuff. And I look at her and I see something that I want, a sense of peace, a yearning of growth that I want. And I want that. And I see that in her. So I was talking with her and I said, you know, I went to an event that had an open bar. Now, y'all know me.
Mm.
An open bar?
Live.
Bitch. An open bar, bitch?
Bitch, I'm drunk.
Drunk boots.
Okay.
Drunk
bitch, I'm
boots.
Drunk.
Like, I got two glasses in my hand. Like, bitch, and I'm on the patio smoking a blunt.
You know what I'm saying?
Bye.
Like, oh, yes.
That's the night. That's
like, first of all, where is the blunt? Like, the two glasses in this nigga hand.
The blunt's in his mouth, just hanging out.
Oh, y'all know I used to serve tables, so I could hold two glasses in one hand and smoke a blunt. Like, I serve tables. Like, I know how to carry glasses. So I'm getting double glasses. Like, it was a Netflix event for CultureCon. Mm-hmm. So Michael was here last week.
Don't have me jack up his last name.
Oladio.
I don't even think you said it right, but. No, I don't think you said it right.
Michael, I'm so sorry. Okay, I'm moving.
Michael,
I'm sorry.
From Invisible Thread?
Not that Michael.
Michael from Scraps?
Michael from Scraps. He was here on the show last week. He's also one of the Creative Collective founders.
About to say something else.
He's also one of the Creative Collective founders, and he helped build the CultureCon, which was this week. Mm-hmm. So it was like
I saw it all convention. Over social media. I'm like, oh, this thing is...
Because it was popping.
Yeah.
Like, all of the black creatives were in the space, and we'll talk about that, too. But he... what was I saying?
You were at CultureCon.
Okay. Mm-hmm. But then I forgot what I was talking about.
It was an open bar.
Okay, yeah. So it was this event.
Blunts in your hand and
right,
drinks.
So it's all these black people. And I was a little nervous, a little shy to speak to people that I really don't know. And, you know, sometimes I would... That's never been me. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? I've always been able to work a room. But I felt like in this particular space, I didn't have like the liquid courage. That you're like, oh, I can have a drink. Mm-hmm. So I went and got me a wine glass with sparkling wine in it. Got me a sparkling wine. Got me a sparkling water. Mm-hmm. Sparkling water with a little lime. And I just walked around with that in my hand to feel like I was doing something. You know what I mean? And so I began to, but I was a little shy with talking to people. But it was nerve-wracking for me because it's like, how am I going to be at this open bar and not drink? And am I going to have a good time? What am I going to feel like? Like, do I belong here? You know, like that sort of thing. And I met some really dope people, had some really great conversations, and went out on the patio and smelt the weed that people were smoking and you know, saw everybody drinking and getting lit and having full-on conversations with each other. And I joined in. But I felt like I was going to be different than everybody else. And I wasn't different.
You were you.
You know what I mean? I was myself, right? And so that's one of the first times I've been able to do that and not like... I've always had a drink. Mm-hmm. That's just never even been an option or just the thought like, oh, I'm not drinking. Like, that's never even been a thing for me. And so that was really different for me. Mm-hmm. And I enjoyed myself. I had a good time. Mm-hmm. Then even the next day at the actual CultureCon, they had a HBO lounge where there were drinks available. And I, once again, I even fancied it up. Got me a sparkling water with a little grapefruit.
Okay.
Come to a little grapefruit.
A little grapefruit and a little lime. You know, I was...
That's a nice little bar.
Yeah, it
with
was
some
cute.
Grapefruit? Okay.
Yeah, he put a little splash of grapefruit in there for me. And so it was just different for me.
That nigga hate grapefruit, but y'all living.
Listen, it worked for me. And I was
I know
just
that's
like,
right.
I just felt good about myself. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Just
isn't it really nice when you get to surprise yourself and like meet new versions of yourself?
Yeah.
Like, oh, I didn't know that this was a part of me.
Yes. Like where I can decide that I'm just no longer that person and I'm going to be somebody else. Mm-hmm. And so that was really great for me. And I enjoyed CultureCon. It was great to see all these great black creatives. But, you know, also... what did you say, ooh?
I don't know what you're about to say. What you about to give?
Well, okay. So, you know, like, a lot of my friends like you are famous.
Lord.
And I have friends that are very well off, especially in culture, in black culture, and that know that move the culture. So like I'm friends with Charlamagne the God. I'm friends with Crystal and Kid Fury and people. You know, they weren't there, but like I was with DeRay McKesson, and me and him were together, and we were walking around the venue, and people would stop him and talk with him, but they would totally like cut me off.
Shit like that wear me out.
Oh my God, it's so funny to me. It don't even like wear me out because you know the previous version of me would probably like hi, like introduce myself. But because I have great friends, Dre was like, "Have you met my friend Drew?" And it would be several times like he had to do that every time because people were so enthralled with him because he just released a book, a New York Times. I think it's a New York Times bestseller now. And it's just funny to me how it was like a who's who. And because we work in Broadway and theater, we don't get the same recognition as television and movies. And so nobody really knows the impact on the culture that mm-hmm. we have. And there weren't any theater people there. Mm-hmm. That boggled my mind. Like, this is for Black creatives, you know, creative culture. And they even said, who works in production, you know, television, film? And I said, I thought to myself, bro, theater is production too. Yeah. Like, we're full on production.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely.
Like, full on. Mm-hmm. Like, millions of dollars, full on production. Mm-hmm. And it just, like, that clicked something for me. It's like, we're not, it's a separate space for Black people in television and film mm-hmm. and theater, and I want that to change. Mm-hmm. And I could also feel it in the way that people, because I'm not used to that. Yeah. I'm used to going to spaces, especially to the theater, and people, if you're Black and we're all Black together, yeah. that we acknowledge each other mm-hmm. and we, you know, we yeah. get to know each other.
Like,
we
really just, have a full community.
Yeah, even if I don't know
right?
what you do, even if I don't know who you are, where you've been, mm-hmm. I'm not expecting people to know me, but it was almost like I've never seen you before. Also, I'm very fair-skinned. Mm-hmm. That, maybe in my head, but that sort of came into play to me, for me too, that people might have thought that I was mixed or that I wasn't fully Black. Because mm-hmm. I've been through, you know, my hair is curly. I had my hair out. Like, just those, I see those little nuances. And so that was another thing for me as well. But the program itself was great. John Legend was there. Coleman Domingo spoke.
So this was the first annual, right?
This was the second one, I believe.
Oh,
yeah,
wow.
Yeah. So they had one last year. I think it was on a smaller scale, but this one's a lot bigger. And also they tried me too, because you couldn't bring food into the venue. So, you know, I had a whole bag full of like my apples and peanut
apple
butter.
Slices.
Right?
Yeah, I know.
And like
boiled eggs.
Boiled, like I had all my shit. But
sunflower seeds.
But I had to leave my bag outside. And so anytime I needed food, I would go back outside to my bag.
Yes, right.
And
yeah.
Listen, you're not about to stop my flow.
No, I know.
But I just thought it was just very different. And it literally clicked for me like, oh, the theater is not respected. Mm-hmm. It's not like in mainstream culture, it's not even thought of. Mm-hmm. I had a girl like DeRay, you know, introduced me. She was like, have you met my friend Drew? And she, I was like, hi, how are you? I'm Drew. She said, hi, thank you. And I laughed, I giggled, and I thought, like, girl, your leave out is exposed and dry, and you're telling me thank you. What are you thanking me for?
She probably was thanking you for not telling her that.
But listen, and then it
for fucking up her game.
But then at the end of the conversation, she said, and I said, you know, hi, you know, thank you. You know, she said after she did that, I was like, at the end of the conversation, he was like, you know, nice. He was saying nice to meet you. He was like, okay, great. You know, we were saying goodbye. I was like, you know, great, hello. You know, I don't think I said nice to meet you, because I didn't say that. But she said, ended up saying thank you again to me, and it was just like, girl, I really wanted to say, girl, what are you thanking me for? Because I was just so blown away. But it was that people were not even registered. They were so in awe mm-hmm. of him and his presence mm-hmm. in their space that they weren't even willing to acknowledge anyone else. That there was, I was a non-motherfucking factor. And I felt like this is so great. Even somebody that I know that is that works for, that is, you know, has a new show coming on BET or whatever. And we follow each other on Twitter, and mm-hmm. he's friends with some other friends of mine. And he was having a conversation with DeRay, and I approached. And DeRay said, hey, do you know Drew? And I've been around this person several times. Like, I've come to support him at his own events, because my friends mm-hmm. were helping with those events. Uh-huh. Mm-hmm. And I've literally been in the same space with him, and he literally will go out of his way to not acknowledge or not speak.
Wow.
And it's been 3 or 4 times where I've seen that, where he's come to events of my friends, and like we've been in the same room, same space, wow. and I've attempted to speak, but it was almost like I'm intentionally going to ignore you. So when I would go to speak, it would be awkward, because then he would like turn or walk away or do something weird in that way. And so, and this was a moment where he had no choice but to acknowledge me, uh-huh. because DeRay said, have you met Drew? Mm-hmm. And he looked at me and said, oh yeah, you, I know through, and he said my mutual friend's name. And I said, I thought it was hilarious.
Did you start laughing right there?
I did. I started giggling, but I was also eating one of them little pork bowls that they had. Like mm-hmm. they had like one of the little. I was like, you know, I dapped them up with my elbow, because I was eating, and yeah. I'm like, I'm hungry. They got these little bowls in here that's supposed to be healthy, so let me test it out. It had a little brown rice in there, yeah. you know, some little pickled cabbage and stuff, and so ooh. I was like, I was eating it, and so I was unbothered, but I thought it was funny.
Lord have mercy.
That this is what has happened to our culture, that people. It even though we love and support each mm-hmm. other, we still have a hierarchy, like who's mm-hmm. doing this and who's doing that.
Yeah.
And even in the Broadway mm-hmm. community, mm-hmm. it's an artsy fartsy mm-hmm. type yeah. of atmosphere. And yeah. and mm-hmm. it just was weird. But there was so much love in the room that all the love overpowered mm-hmm. those
good.
Small instances.
Yeah.
You know what
good,
I mean?
Good, 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 good.
But I would be remiss not to mention and also mentioned, you know, how us as theater people are, we have to sort of bridge that gap. And I don't know how to do that just yet. Mm-hmm. But I feel like it's necessary mm-hmm. to, because
the bridge theater, the gap in terms of us like being more, having more cultural relevance.
Yes, more cultural relevance, but mm-hmm. then also because there was the syncopated ladies, syncopated tap dancers. They're sisters. Mm-hmm. They've worked with Debbie Allen. You know, you see them. They have so Chloe and Maude, I believe. Yeah. They tapped, and so mm-hmm. they did some tap dancing, and people were very receptive to them. But it's not something that they would seek out. You know, they cheered for them. They did a little Beyonce. Yeah. They tapped like Beyonce. They just did like a nice little routine.
That's cute,
and it was very cute. And people were receptive to it, but they weren't like. It's not something they would seek out. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
You have to bring it to them and say, I want to sort of connect, get that, I don't know, get rid of that disconnect. I don't know how to explain what I'm saying.
I know exactly what you mean. And for me, I think it ties into theater across the board, whether like Broadway all the way on down, even remnants of community theater. It feels, I can see how it feels very elitist. And I can see how it also feels like it's a very like classist thing. Mm-hmm. So people absolutely. In particular thinking about like the Black community, how they think and how they might believe that, oh, theater isn't for me. Like I can't see myself like in theater, going to theater. I think about like my show Fireflies, which actually pisses me off a bit. Like some of the cheapest tickets are like $68. Brandon's sister came to one of the previews, and like I got her a ticket. Mm-hmm. She loved the show so much that she wanted to come again, and mm-hmm. she wanted to bring her friends. Brandon texted her the link to get tickets, so she looked at the link. He said literally 15 seconds later, he texts her back, oh, these tickets are expensive. Mm-hmm. So like I can understand why, at least within the Black community, they may not see or really understand theater because it can feel elitist. Yeah. Like tickets are so expensive.
So expensive.
Right? Like, you can turn on a TV and you see people.
Right.
You can go get, even though movie tickets are getting a bit pricey, but it's not no $68 mm-hmm, and what have you.
Right.
So I can definitely understand that.
I feel like it's interesting because I feel like the bridge and the divide for people who aren't Black, you know, when I think of the white community in terms mm-hmm. of Broadway and film and television, it's so mixed.
Yeah.
It's so mixed. And mainly it's because there are white producers on both sides.
Yeah.
There are white theater owners, you know what I mean? So I wonder if it would be different if Black people had those bigger seats and had those bigger titles, you know mm-hmm. what I mean?
In terms of like being producers and what have you, mm-hmm. oh, I think so, 100%.
100%, I agree.
100%. It's like just a handful mm-hmm. of Black producers, right?
My God. But like, y'all, we didn't talk for literally an hour and a half mm-hmm. about a whole bunch of shit.
And we ain't getting to
none of the segments, topics. None of the hot topics.
None of the questions.
None of the questions.
I couldn't say what I wanted to say.
Well, okay, we'll do that. We'll just do that. I said what I said. And then we'll go home.
Oh, okay.
And we'll do questions. Like, I mean, because, but we'll have you back, Crystalyn, because you brought so much to the table.
We don't want to do a question instead.
Why you don't want to do I said what I said?
Well, I think it would be nice to end on a question.
Okay, we'll end on a question.
Like, oh, I love the fury.
Okay.
Yes.
We will end on a question.
Are you a Leo?
No, I'm not.
Okay.
I'm a Taurus. This is a Leo.
I am definitely a Leo. We will end on a question.
I'm
but
a Capricorn for anyone who cares.
I'm so sorry, y'all, that we didn't get to any of the hot topics this week. Crystalyn, will you come back for us next week?
Yeah.
So we have you and Amber back next
week. Oh, that would be cute.
Yeah, come back next week.
It'd be fun.
And so we can go back over all the hot topics we didn't do.
Thank you, but I got
you're going to be here next week too, right?
I am going to be here next
week. Okay, and I think Amber might be gone again next week. Amber's not here this week because she needed to go on vocal rest. Yeah. She would have been here, but
she's rehearsing for Little Shop.
Yeah, so she's rehearsing and she needs to go on vocal rest. And I think she leaves next week or in 2 weeks or so, but she might be here, she might not. But Crystalyn, we'd love to have you back.
I would love to come back.
She might be here, she might not.
Well, I mean,
you won't know until you press play.
Because I don't know for certain, because I don't know what her schedule is, you know. And this week she was going to be here, but you know, you got to take care of herself. She's working.
You have to take care of yourself.
Yeah, yeah. So I'm like, not even. I'm glad that she's taking care of herself.
Amen.
She's taking the time. So we'll just end on a question, and we'll have Crystalyn back next week. And you know what I'm saying?
Okay.
It'll be good. Okay. So here we go. This says, let me make sure. Oh, this is an invite. Just let me scroll down. Okay. She said, a face that makes you comfortable attached to an uncomfortable story. It's in advance. This is a very long email. Sorry, so many opinions. She said, hello, my name is Sydney Simone and my best friend Terrell Jones, and I absolutely love listening to this podcast every week. We both just graduated with BFAs in theater, and we have learned so much from this podcast, more than an entire year at school could have taught us, shade intended. My question for all of you is more of a discussion, and I would love to hear y'all's point of view. As we all should know, there is a new movie coming out, The Hate U Give, which is about a young African-American girl, Amandla Steinberg, who finds her voice to speak about the shooting of her best friend, which she witnessed. When I first saw the trailer, I was a bit thrown off only because I know of the actor, whom is light-skinned, in her recent roles. She is also in Where Hands Touch, which portrays Steinberg as a biracial teen who falls in love with the German teen. Still confused as to why someone felt we needed that story. And she was
that
also...
story.
Listen, that is capitalized.
Yes. I believe it from your reading.
And she was also in Everything, where yet again she falls in love with a white male. So from her history, when I saw the trailer for The Hate U Give, I was honestly confused as to why Steinberg was the one telling this story. Now, I haven't read the book, so I'm not sure if she was written as a character with a lighter skin tone, but in this day and age, I was excited for the movie, but I question why Steinberg is playing the lead. I've grown up around all colors and types, and I would never say that someone of a lighter skin tone doesn't have the same black experience or couldn't play that character, but I feel as if actors of a darker skin tone would have given the movie a different effect. Within the black community, we all know that there are little stigmas between the lighter and darker skin tone African Americans, and I personally would have felt more connected to an actor of a darker skin tone portraying the role. As I said, this isn't to say that I haven't grown up around someone of a lighter skin tone that lives in the hood, quote unquote, as the character is portrayed in the movie. She's put that in parentheses. I guess the character is in the hood. Mm-hmm. But looking at the history of police brutality has been targeted towards more darker skinned African Americans. That's true. With that being said, the role having been played by a darker skinned actress would have, in my opinion, made the movie more tangible within the current political climate. Mm. Now, I would love to hear y'all's opinions on this. Love y'all bitches. Have fun.
Yeah.
Love y'all bitches.
Yes.
Have fun.
Now, you know, I'm a light skinned man.
Mm-hmm.
And I definitely agree with that, that there are certain things that, and I've also taken myself out of auditioning for things or different pieces because of me being a lighter skinned man.
Mm-hmm.
I know that my fair skin does not allow me to have the impact, or carry the impact or carry a story in the same way that a darker skinned person would.
Mm-hmm.
And that is okay with me. There are other things that I can do. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
And so I definitely agree. I haven't seen the trailer for the movie. I've heard about this movie. I haven't really, you know, gotten into the depths of it. What do you guys think?
And so we know that whiteness is the most desirable thing according to America.
And anything
America
attached to it and adjacent to it.
So that means that the lighter you look, the closer to desirable you are. Mm-hmm. And then if we're thinking about Hollywood and thinking about how Hollywood depicts black people and wanting for people to come and see the things they put out and that they produce, I can understand, thinking of all of that, why they will have Amandla be this character.
Absolutely.
So that they can have people come and see this movie. And then especially if it's a piece talking about police brutality, then let's have someone who looks closer to whiteness so it can be more palatable.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Right.
So it could be more comfortable. So I can understand that. What I don't understand is I know there have been multiple times where Amandla has said publicly that she doesn't want to do certain things because of she understands her light skin privilege.
Mm.
So this is where I'm like, well, what
but girl,
the fuck
do you
decision?
Right.
So that confuses me if I think about her track record and her talking about turning down specific roles because of.
But also she talked about turning down Black Panther or.
Mm-hmm.
But then they were also saying, girl, you weren't even really considered.
Ooh.
Like she
I remember
was saying,
that.
Yeah,
I
she was saying
that
she was, you know, when she denied going in for Shuri. For Black Panther because she thought that should go to a darker skinned.
Well, maybe she meant like she got the audition and she said no, and they were like, "But you weren't." I mean,
right?
When people say I was up for or I turned down, it's such a scale,
right?
Mm-hmm. You know, how
like
people
were you?
Are?
They be lying.
I had some guy I hadn't seen in forever. I saw him on the street. I won't say his name, but he was in town.
He's gonna tell me after the show.
Like, oh, what are you doing in town? And he was like, "Well, you know." I'm gonna do Hamilton. And then I was like, oh, and he goes, yeah, I gotta call back. And I was like, nigga, get out of here.
My mouth is a gape.
I was like,
not a call. Everybody get a call back. You black, boo.
Go away.
Listen.
Well, you know, I'm going to be in Hamilton.
Listen.
I got a call back. No,
is he going to do a sensible riff challenge, too?
I was like, what does this even... Oh, I immediately called Amber. I did. Because she knows him. I was like,
oh, you got to tell me who this is. You got to tell me. Okay.
It was funny.
What are you doing in town?
What are you doing in town?
Oh, I'm about to be on Broadway.
I'm about to do this. It was the beat. I got a call back.
They ain't tell you? You ain't know? This is what's happening in my life. But yeah, so.
I can't.
In the book itself, the character that Amanda plays is a dark skinned.
Oh, okay. Girl. So that's problematic.
Yeah. Extremely.
Yeah.
And also, so her talking about turning shit down. What's up?
Yeah. I mean, girl, like. It's all optics. Everybody's trying to do things for press and like, oh, you know, trying to garner the new political wave and social commentary and trying to be the most woke. Sometimes I just want to be back. Like, just take me back to sleep. Just put me back down. Like, put me down. You know what I mean? Like, just take me out. I want to be out of this. I don't want to be woke no more. Woke no more. That's my new play.
That was just our monologue.
That was the monologue.
He gave us
right
a full monologue.
Woke no more. That's the name of this episode. But yeah, so thank you so much, Cindy, for writing in.
Thank you, Cindy.
Cindy Simone. Sydney. I'm saying Sydney, right?
S-Y-D.
Sydney.
Sydney. Okay. Because you know, Cindy Winters be having me messed up. The way she spelled her name. So I be thinking everybody's name is Cindy, Sydney. I look at it and I keep thinking like, am I gonna mess it up? That's everybody's name, though.
That's a real fear.
James I. James and
Zaylion.
I'm sorry, James Imes and Jalen. I be messing up the names, but yeah. Well, that's it, y'all. We gonna end it right here because we done went on and just like Chris. I love
we
you.
We really
so much.
Went off book. Like
we were off all the way off. Like book. Ain't none of the segments.
Ain't nothing.
Ain't nothing.
Okay.
Here. But I hope y'all got something.
I love a good kiki.
Listen, I do too. We kikied all the way home.
Yes, we did.
Okay.
So thank y'all so much. You've tuned into a brand new episode of Off Book presented to you by Broadway Black, and I'm Drew Shay.
I'm Donya Love.
I'm Crystal and Lloyd.
And we hit our marks and we out. Boom.
Booyah.
Peace. Boom. Bye, y'all.
Bye.
The Outsiders, S.E. Hinton's generation-defining novel, is now a powerful and moving Broadway hit that the New York Post is calling the best new musical of the season so far. Don't miss your chance to join Ponyboy and the Greasers and experience the classic story come to life in a whole new way. The New York Times calls it refreshing, gritty, and endlessly effective. So get your tickets today at outsidersmusical.com, and of course, stay gold. They say well-behaved women seldom make history. Just ask the Supps. A vibrant and wholly original new musical, Supps celebrates the real women who changed history and their story that is more timely than ever. See the show Variety calls an epic tour de force new musical. Deadline Cheers is a rare Broadway feat and leaves audiences inspired to keep marching. Supps has arrived on Broadway and not a moment too soon. Get your tickets today at suppsmusical.com.